I don't think I got that spell quite right, Michael said when the last huge scalloped edge had disappeared round the bathroom door.
And didn't he let you know it, said Calcifer. Another log, please.
Michael gave Calcifer a log. Sophie fed the dog man. But neither of them dared do anything much else except stand around eating bread and honey for breakfast until Hal came out of the bathroom. He came forth 2 hours later, out of a steam of verbena-scented spells. He was all in black. His suit was black, his boots were black, and his hair was black too, the same blue raven black as Miss Angorian's. His earring was a long jet pendant. Sophie wondered if the black hair was in honour of Mrs. Pentstemon. She agreed with Mrs. Pentstemon that black hair suited Howl. His green glass eyes went better with it. But she wondered very much which suit the black one really was. Howl conjured himself a black tissue and blew his nose on it. The window rattled. He picked up one of the slices of bread and honey from the bench and beckoned the dog man. The dog man looked dubious.
I only want you where I can look at you, Howl croaked.
His cold was still bad.
Come here, Pooch.
As the dog crawled reluctantly into the middle of the room, Howl added,
You won't find my other suit in the bathroom, Mrs. Snoop. You're not getting your hands on any of my clothes again.
Sophie stopped tiptoeing toward the bathroom and watched Howl walk round the dog man, eating bread and honey and blowing his nose by turns.
What do you think of this as a disguise? He said.
He flicked the black tissue at Calcifer and started to fall forward onto hands and knees. Almost as he started to move, he was gone. By the time he touched the floor, he was a curly red setter, just like the dog man. The dog man was taken completely by surprise, and his instincts got the better of him. His hackles came up, his ears lowered, and he growled. Howl played up, or else he felt the same. The two identical dogs walked round one another, glaring, growling, bristling, and getting ready to fight. Sophie caught the tail of the one she thought was the dog man. Michael grabbed for the one he thought was Howl. Howl rather hastily turned himself back. Sophie found a tall black person standing up in front of her and let go of the back of Howl's jacket. The dog man sat down on Michael's feet, staring tragically.
Good, said Howl. If I can deceive another dog, I can fool everyone else. No one at the funeral is going to notice a stray dog lifting its leg against the gravestones.
He went to the door and turned the knob blue down.
Wait a moment, said Sophie. If you're going to the funeral as a red setter, why take all the trouble of getting yourself up in black?
Howl lifted his chin and looked noble.
Respect to Mrs. Pentstemon, he said, opening the door. She liked one to think of all the details.
He went out into the street of Porthaven. Chapter 16, in which there is a great deal of witchcraft. Several hours passed. The dog man was hungry again. Michael and Sophie decided to have lunch too. Sophie approached Calcifer with the frying pan.
Why can't you have bread and cheese for once?
Calcifer grumbled. All the same, he bent his head. Sophie was just putting the pan on top of the curly green flames when Howl's voice rang out hoarsely from nowhere.
Brace yourself, Calcifer! She's found me!
Calcifer sprang upright. The frying pan fell across Sophie's knees.
You'll have to wait!
Calcifer roared, flaming blindingly up the chimney. Almost at once he blurred into a dozen or so burning blue faces, as if he was being shaken violently about and burned with a loud, throaty whirring.
That must mean they're fighting, Michael whispered.
Sophie sucked a slightly burned finger and picked slices of bacon off her skirt with the other hand, staring at Calcifer. He was whipping from side to side of the fireplace. His blurred faces pulsed from deep blue to sky blue and then almost to white. One moment he had multiple orange eyes, the next rows of starry silver ones. She had never imagined anything like it. Something swept overhead with a blast and a boom which shook everything in the room. A second something followed with a long, shrill roar. Calcifer pulse nearly blew black, and Sophie's skin fizzed with the back blast from the magic. Michael scrambled for the window. "They're quite near." Sophie hobbled to the window too. The storm of magic seemed to have affected half the things in the room. The skull was yattering its jaw so hard that it was travelling round in circles. Packets were jumping, powder was seething in jars. A book dropped heavily out of the shelves and lay open on the floor, fanning its pages back and forth. At one end of the room, scented steam boiled out of the bathroom. At the other end, Howl's guitar made out-of-tune twangings, and Calcifer whipped about harder than ever. Michael put the skull in the sink to stop it from yattering itself onto the floor, while he opened the window and craned out. Whatever was happening was maddeningly just out of sight. People in the houses opposite were at doors and windows, pointing to something more or less overhead. Sophie and Michael ran to the broom cupboard, where they seized a velvet cloak each and flung them on. Sophie got the one that turned its wearer into a red-bearded man. Now she knew why Calcifer had laughed at her in the other one. Michael was a horse. But there was no time to laugh just then. Sophie dragged the door open and sped into the street, followed by the dog man, who seemed surprisingly calm about the whole thing. Michael trotted out after her with a clatter of non-existent hooves, leaving Calcifer whipping from blue to white behind them. The street was full of people looking upward. No one had time to notice things like horses coming out of houses. Sophie and Michael looked too, and found a huge cloud boiling and twisting just above the chimney tops. It was black and rotating on itself violently. White flashes that were not quite like light stabbed through the murk of it. But almost as soon as Michael and Sophie arrived, the clot of magic took on the shape of a misty bundle of fighting snakes. Then it tore in two, with a noise like an enormous cat fight. One part sped yowling across the roofs and out to sea, and the second went screaming after it. Some people retreated indoors then. Sophie and Michael joined the rush of braver people down the sloping lanes to the dockside. There everyone seemed to think the best view was to be had along the curve of the harbour wall. Sophie hobbled to get out along it too, but there was no need to go beyond the shelter of the harbour master's hut. Two clouds were hanging in the air some way out to sea, on the other side of the harbour wall, the only two clouds in the calm blue sky. It was quite easy to see them. It was equally easy to see the dark patch of storm raging on the sea between the clouds, flinging up great white-topped waves. There was an unfortunate ship caught in that storm. Its masts were beating back and forth. They could see spouts of water hitting it on all sides. The crew were desperately trying to take in the sails, but one at least had torn to flying grey rags. "Can't they have a care for that ship?" someone said indignantly. Then the wind and the waves from the storm hit the harbour wall. White water lashed over, and the brave persons out on the wall came crowding hurriedly back to the quayside, where the moored ships were heaving and grinding at their moorings. Among all this was a great deal of screaming in high singing voices. Sophie put her face out into the wind beyond the hut, where the screaming came from, and discovered that the raging magic had disturbed more than the sea and the wretched ship. A number of wet, slithery-looking ladies with flying green-brown hair were dragging themselves up onto the harbour wall, screaming and holding long, wet arms out to more screaming ladies tossing in the waves. Every one of them had a fishtail instead of legs. "Confound it!" said Sophie. "The mermaids from the curse!" That meant only two more impossible things to come true now. She looked up at the two clouds. Howl was kneeling on the left-hand one, much larger and nearer than she would have expected. He was still dressed in black. Typically enough, he was staring over his shoulder at the frantic mermaids. He was not looking at them as if he remembered they were part of the curse at all. "Keep your mind on the witch!" the horse beside Sophie yelled. The witch sprang into being, standing on the right-hand cloud, in a whirl of flame-coloured robe and streaming red hair, with her arms raised to invoke further magic. As Howl turned and looked at her, her arms came down. Howl's cloud erupted into a fountain of rose-coloured flame. Heat from it swept across the harbour, and the stones of the wall steamed.
"It's all right," gasped the horse.
Howl was on the tossing, nearly sinking ship below. He was a tiny black figure now, leaning against the bucking mainmast. He let the witch know she had missed by waving at her cheekily. The witch saw him the instant he waved. Cloud, witch, and all at once became a savagely swooping red bird diving at the ship. The ship vanished. The mermaid sang a doleful scream. There was nothing but sulkily tossing water where the ship had been. But the diving bird was going too fast to stop. It plunged into the sea with a huge splash. Everyone on the quayside cheered.
"I knew that wasn't a real ship, really," someone behind Sophie said.
"Yes, it must have been an illusion," the horse said wisely. "It was too small." As proof that the ship had been much nearer than it looked, the waves from the splash reached the harbour wall before Michael had stopped speaking. A 20-foot green hill of water rode smoothly sideways across it, sweeping the screaming mermaids into the harbour, rolling every moored ship violently sideways and thudding in swirls round the harbour master's hut. An arm came out of the side of the horse and hauled Sophie back toward the quay. Sophie gasped and stumbled in knee-high grey water. The dogman bounded beside them, soaked to the ears. They had just reached the quay, and the boats in the harbour had all just rolled upright, when a second mountain of water rolled over the harbour wall. Out of its smooth side burst a monster. It was a long, black, clawed thing, half cat, half sea lion, and it came racing down the wall toward the quay. Another burst out of the wave as it smashed onto the harbour, long and low too, but scalier, and came racing after the first monster. Everyone realised that the fight was not over yet and splashed backward hurriedly against the sheds and houses on the quayside. Sophie fell over a rope and then a doorstep. The arm came out of the horse and dragged her upright as the two monsters streaked past in a scatter of salt water. Another wave swirled over the harbour wall, and two more monsters burst out of that. They were identical to the first two, except the scaly one was closer to the cat-like one. And the next rolling wave brought two more, closer together yet.
"What's going on?"
Sophie squawked at this third pair racing past, shaking the stones of the jetty as they ran.
"Illusions," Michael's voice said out of the horse. "Some of them. They're both trying to fool one another into chasing the wrong one."
"Which is who?" said Sophie.
"No idea," said the horse.
Some of the onlookers found the monsters too terrifying. Many went home. Others jumped down into the rolling ships to fend them off from the quay. Sophia and Michael joined the hard corps of watchers who set off through the streets of Porthaven after the monsters. First they followed a river of seawater, then huge wet paw prints, and finally white gouges and scratches where the claws of the creatures had dug into the stones of the street. These led everyone out at the back of the town to the marshes where Sophia and Michael had chased the shooting star. By this time, all six creatures were bounding black dots, vanishing into the flat distance. The crowd spread out into a ragged line on the bank, staring, hoping for more, and afraid of what they might see. After a while, no one could see anything but empty marsh. Nothing happened. Quite a few people were turning away to leave, when, of course, everyone else shouted,
"Look!"
A ball of pale fire rolled lazily up in the distance. It must have been enormous. The bang that went with it only reached the watchers when the fireball had become a spreading tower of smoke. The line of people all winced at the blunt thunder of it. They watched the smoke spread until it became part of the mist on the marshes. They went on watching after that, but there was simply peace and silence. The wind rattled the marsh weeds, and birds began to dare to cry again.
"I reckon they must have done for one another," people said.
The crowd gradually split into separate figures, hurrying away to jobs they had left half done. Sophie and Michael waited until the very last, when it was clear that it was indeed all over. Then they turned slowly back into Porthaven. Neither of them felt like speaking. Only the dog man seemed happy. He sauntered beside them so friskily that Sophie was sure he thought Hal was done for. He was so pleased with life that when they turned into the street where Hal's house was, and there happened to be a stray cat crossing the road, the dog man uttered a joyful bark and galloped after it. He chased it with a dash and a skitter straight to the castle doorstep, where it turned and glared. "Get off!" it mewed. "This is all I needed." The dog backed away, looking ashamed. Michael clattered up to the door. "How?" he shouted. The cat shrank to kitten size and looked very sorry for itself. "And you both look ridiculous," it said. "Open the door. I'm exhausted." Sophie opened the door and the cat crawled inside. The cat crawled to the hearth where Calcifer was down to the merest blue flicker, and, with an effort, got its front paws up onto the chair seat. There it grew, rather slowly, into Howl, bent double. "Did you kill the witch?" Michael asked eagerly, taking off his cloak and becoming himself too. "No," said Howl. He turned round and flopped into the chair, where he lay looking very tired indeed. "All that on top of a cold," he croaked. "Sophie, for pity's sake, take off that horrible red beard and find the bottle of brandy in the closet, unless you've drunk it, or turned it into turpentine, of course." Sophie took off her cloak and found the brandy and a glass. Hal drank one glass off as if it were water. Then he poured out a second glass, and instead of drinking it, he dripped it carefully on Calcifer. Calcifer flared and sizzled and seemed to revive a little. Howell poured a third glass and lay back sipping it.